Well, the crisis in Attawapiskat, the Idle No More movement, the debate over how to find justice for missing and murdered Aboriginal women. My next guest says all of these issues are indicative of the poor relations between First Nations and their non-Native counterparts. But it wasn't always this way. Jim Miller is a professor emeritus of history at the University of Saskatchewan, and later this morning on Parliament Hill, he'll be speaking at the Big Thinking Lecture. It's organized by the Federation for the Humanities and Social Sciences. Introducing him will be University of Alberta professor Cindy Blackstock. She's also executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society of Canada. They join me this morning in studio. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming in. Jim, if I could start with you. We're aware of the issues facing the country and our Aboriginal communities. It's a big question, but I'm going to pose it to you this morning on the show. How did we get here? How did we get to this point?
It wasn't always this way. Once upon a time, relations were good when we needed each other, particularly for trade purposes or for military and diplomatic purposes. But we got beyond that point and began to develop a situation where newcomers, Europeans, regarded First Nations more as an obstacle than an asset. And that's when we began to impose policies that tried to change them and led to all the problems. What we need to do is work our way out of that situation.
What are some recent examples, though, of how trust has been squandered? Was there a turning point in modern history?
Perhaps one of the most glaring recent examples would be the First Nations Education Act, which fell apart when the Assembly of First Nations Chiefs refused to support it and Sean Atleo quit as national chief. I think one of the fundamental problems there was it hadn't been developed in a consultative way that took the First Nations leadership seriously. It had been a very top-down approach. Mm. That is symptomatic of the kind of period and relationship we've been through.
Going back a little bit further than that, though, Cindy, a lot of people talk about OCA as a turning point. Do you see it as such?
Well, I think there's been lots of reminders, I guess, about the flawed relationship that continues to exist between the government of Canada and First Nations peoples. Where I've seen progress has been in the knowledge of Canadians, which makes Jim's lecture so important. As Canadians become more informed about what the historical relationship was between the government of Canada and First Nations, they're in a better position to critically analyze contemporary issues. For example, one of the other manifestations of this top-down approach is in First Nations child welfare. On October 20th to 24th here in Ottawa, the Canadian High Human Rights Tribunal will hear final legal arguments on a historic case that was filed 7 years ago alleging that the government of Canada today is discriminating against First Nations children in foster care by providing about 34%, according to the government's own documents, less child welfare support than other kids, leading to historic highs of these kids in foster care.
Jim, are you keeping your eye on that case as well?
Yes. Cindy and I were talking about it a little earlier this morning. It's a fascinating and extremely significant case.
You mentioned Sean Atleo stepping down from the AFN. For a lot of people, that was a wake-up call, because within the Aboriginal community itself, there is a range of opinion and dissatisfaction. What do you see? When you heard that he had stepped down, what struck you?
Well, it's another reminder that the First Nations community is not monolithic like any group. You think about Idle No More as well, which started a little earlier. It's a new generation of emerging leaders within First Nations. They're somewhat frustrated by their own leadership and even more frustrated with government.
Cindy, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's really important to remember that it's not a bad thing that First Nations people have different points of view. In fact, we're going to be going into a building, Jim and I, in a few moments, where people agree on very little. And so it's really a false expectation to believe that all First Nations people are going to believe unanimously in one area. What we do agree on is, across the board, all First Nations believe that First Nations children should have equitable opportunities to get a good education, be healthy and proud of who they are. And most Canadians believe that too.
Was it partly, though, the structure of the AFN that was the problem, Jim?
Yes, that certainly contributes to the difficulty. The AFN is an organization of chiefs rather than an organization of peoples. And those chiefs have different interests very often. For example, if they have treaties or don't have treaties, makes an enormous difference in their approach. Sean Atleo is from BC, which mostly does not have treaties, and rely on Aboriginal rights. A lot of his opposition came from the Prairie region, which is a treaty-based region. There's always that tension between those that base their arguments on Aboriginal rights and those that base them on treaty rights, and that tension is always a danger within the AFN.
Cindy, earlier this month, an interesting development here in Ottawa, a creation of a group led by former AFN Grand Chief Ovid Mekhadi, Prime Minister's Joe Clark, former Prime Minister Paul Martin. It was a big splash. I wondered what you thought. I actually thought to myself, what would Cindy think of that?
Well, I think it's always a good thing when we have leading, particularly non-Aboriginal Canadians, saying that this is an important issue, not just for First Nations, Métis and Inuit people, but for all of us as Canadians in creating the type of Canada that's worthy of our ancestors' dreams. And I mean that collectively as our ancestors' dreams. If we really want to be a country that embodies fairness, justice and respect, then we need to get this relationship right. And I think that's what I heard from the former National Chief and from Mary Simon, and as well as Joe Clark and Paul Martin.
Jim, did you have a more cynical reaction to the formation of that group, or are you as optimistic as Cindy here?
Well, I don't know if I'm optimistic, but I was heartened by the emergence of the Partnership mm-hmm. for New Canada, because we need a vehicle to carry on the reconciliation movement after the Truth and Reconciliation Commission ceases operations next June 30. If this new organization turns out to be viable and builds some support, it could be the vehicle for trying to advance reconciliation between First Nations and the rest of the country.
And the other piece about this, I think, is to realize that it's part of a pattern. I don't grow all kinds of flower gardens. We have the federal government in court as well to convince them to do the right thing. And I think it's looking at a constellation of different types of efforts to try and bring this into public attention that has the most potential.
That's a great word, constellation. One of the glints today on the Big Thinking conversation. Jim, thank you very much. Cindy, thank you as well.
Thank you, Haley.
Thank you.
Jim Miller, Canada Research Chair, Professor of History at the University of Saskatchewan. Cindy Blackstock, the author and Executive Director of First Nations Child and Family Caring Society of Canada. Cindy and Jim will be part of this morning's Big Thinking Lecture Series on Parliament Hill, and the topic, why can't First Nations and the Canadian government just get along?